I'm not
sure. Go to the bottom of the screen, open up your chat button, and where it says two, scroll down for Tina Worden, W-O-R-D-E-N. Please give us your full first and last name.
You're talking about for people whose names don't appear on their screen.
Exactly.
They may have to hit the more button that gives them that option of participants in chat. Mine only shows mute, stop video, and more. So the more button gives you some options. And I see iPhone there. You can change your name, Sandy.
I can?
You can. Uh-huh. You can rename yourself.
Okay, but I don't know how to get back to the original screen. So I don't know.
Let's go to the participants where you see your picture and where it says me, and it will give you the option to rename.
While we're changing things, can I give myself more hair?
Good call, Bob.
Well, I mean, I've given myself a suit and tie, so I don't see why not.
I haven't found anything that works.
Yeah, I can't get back, so I don't know.
Okay, we'll get started here in 1 second.
Well, if Lena has your name, Sandy, you're good to go.
Okay.
Oh, Sandy, you're fine. I see your face.
Okay, but I don't see anyone now. Okay, now.
If you go to the upper right hand of your screen, you'll see a little checkerboard with a whole bunch of dots. Right at the top.
I don't see that, but okay. I see search. I see Alan. So, whatever.
We see you, and you're wearing lipstick. No fear.
Sandy's on her phone, so the UI is a little bit different than it is on the laptop.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, what do you suggest so I can see your faces in the agenda?
There is an option, and I don't know exactly what they are off the top of my head.
Pin off. You can unpin it and pin it. There's a pin option. Can you hear me, Alan?
Yes.
Okay, finally I'm working. Okay.
Rename.
Yeah, you can do a pin.
Oh, dear.
Sandy, what you're looking for is something that says...
So right click on your picture, and you can do the pin, and it'll pop up as the dominant picture.
I don't have a picture.
Yeah, you have one. But if you want to change it to you to be dominant one, you just right click it and it'll pop up like pin. Like, yeah, you just, so you can change who you see it first.
Okay.
So I don't go ahead and... whatever.
All right. Well said, Sandy.
I don't see me at all. I see all the list of people, but whatever.
We see you.
Yeah, we can see you.
We see you, and you look lovely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. So,
all right. I'm going to go ahead and get started. Welcome, everybody, to our June virtual membership meeting of the Civic Federation. My name is Alan Gadgetar. I am the acting president and vice president. I'll be our moderator for today. We have quite the program this evening. We have our county board candidates debate for the special election coming up next month. We have the three candidates. We also have Dr. Francisco Duran, our new superintendent of schools. Then we will have awards, our typical awards, which we usually do during our banquet, which of course we canceled this year. And then we'll have nominations for somebody to fill this hot chair. Okay? So, I'm going to go ahead and let's see. Tina, can you mute everybody? I'm having trouble getting my controls up. Except for me, of course. All right, let's see if I can do it. Okay. All right, so the first thing we're going to do is the Pledge of Allegiance. pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, under God, with liberty and justice for all. Right. Too many screens open. Share. All right, I'm going to go back to my agenda. So the first item on our agenda this evening is the candidates forum. And we have our three candidates with us tonight, Mr. Bob Cambridge, Ms. Susan Cunningham, and Mr. Takis Karantonis. So I'm going to unmute those three. Bear with me while I do that. Bob, you may have to unmute. Bob's unmuted. Tina or Dennis, can you unmute the other two? I'm trying to find them in my list of people.
I think I'm all set,
Bob. They're unmuted.
All three? Okay, great. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is we're going to determine our order of speaking. And to do that, bear with me while I pull up the document so that everybody can see exactly what we're doing. Okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to use a random number generator from Google, and we're going to have it generate random numbers between 1 and 3. And I'm going to go to each candidate, and for this part, I'm going to just go in alphabetical order by last name. So Mr. Cambridge, then Ms. Cunningham, then Mr. Karantonis, and I'm going to have the random number generator generate a number from 1 through 3. And then that will determine whoever gets 1 will be number 1, whoever gets 2 will be number 2, whoever gets 3 will be number 3. Once we have determined those candidate numbers, then we'll use that for the rest of the forum. And then we'll start with opening statements in the order of candidate numbers 1, 2, and 3. And then I will read, each candidate will after the opening statements, we have a number of questions that have been provided to us by one of our committees. And I will read those questions, and we'll go through in order that I just described. Right after the initial rounds, we'll have candidate number 2 go first, and then for the second round of questions, we'll have candidate number 3 go first, and we'll just go through it that way until we are out of time, okay? And bear with me, I need to pull up the timer. Okay, so I'm gonna stop sharing that, and I'm gonna go to Google. I couldn't figure out a way to use a coin toss for three people, so this was the best way I could think of. My son, who's in APS, came up with this idea. I said, yeah, use the Google number generator. I said, okay, that sounds good to me. Okay, so let me share my screen again. Yeah, man, I really have too many windows open. Google. Okay. Here we go. So, wow. The screen does not want to let me do this. There we go. Sorry about this. It's a little acting up a little bit. I want to make sure everybody sees me do this, so bear with me. Google.com. Okay, now share. Okay, here we go. I don't know why that was so hard. Random number generator. Okay, so this is a random number generator. It allows me to choose a range from 1 to 10, and I'm gonna choose from 1 to 3, and then I'm gonna generate a number. So I'm just gonna click generate so you see how it works. I'm gonna click generate and it chose 1. I'm gonna generate again, and you see that it's generating 3. So first person is Mr. Cambridge. And so Mr. Cambridge, I'm going to generate your number now, and it's going to be number 2. Mr. Cambridge, you are number 2. Second person is Ms. Cunningham. I'm going to generate your number now. You are number three. Therefore, Mr. Karantonis, you are candidate number one. Okay. I promised you that was entirely random. And what we'll do now is we will have our candidates do their introductions. And that is going to take 2 minutes each. And bear with me for a second here while I pull up my timer. Okay. All right, Mr. Karantonis. Sorry, there we go. All right. So you will be first, if you would care to go ahead and start.
Okay. I'm starting. Good evening. Thank you, dear Sir Fed, for having us tonight. I'm Takis Karantonis, and I'm running for county board because I'm proud of what Arlington is, and I want to shape our future. I'm an immigrant. With my wife, Lida, we landed in Arlington in 2007. Speak 8 languages and I'm part of the rich cultural mosaic of our community. I'm a planner and an economist. As a former executive director of CIPRO, I worked with businesses, civic associations, and nonprofits to transform the Pike. As a vice chair of the Alliance for Housing Solutions, I've been at the front lines of every effort to avoid displacement of young families of moderate and lower income Arlingtonians. As a former chair of EcoAction in Arlington, I understand how growth needs to be balanced with the stewardship of natural resources. As a member of the Public Transit Advisory Committee, I know how critical it is to rescue Metro and fix the ART bus system for our economy. I participated in the planning for the transformation of the Career Center. I know what it takes to meet rising student enrollment and support our public schools. Not only as a policy geek, but also as a former civic association president, I'm committed to serious planning with broad, meaningful public participation. I walk the walk. COVID has revealed vulnerabilities and inequalities that must give us pause. And we also all watch the horrible videos of George Floyd and racial groups. Thousands of Arlingtonians marched. As we pride ourselves for being a diverse and equitable community, we realize that this special election is not just about deliverables of local governments. It's about leadership and values and about restoring trust in the government for all Arlingtonians without exception. This is why I'm running and I'm ready to serve. So I'm looking forward to the discussion tonight and I thank again the Civic Federation for having us.
Thank you, Mr. Karantonis. Mr. Cunningham? Ms. Cunningham, I'm sorry.
I think it's Mr.
Cunningham. I was too. Yeah, whatever. He's better looking than I am.
You're right, Bob. You're number two. Too many moving parts.
Bob Cambridge. I've been a resident of Arlington for over 40 years. In fact, been a time before that. I most recently moved here in 1982. I have seen an awful lot of trees disappear in that time. I have seen the city grow a great deal. I've seen it grow in some really, really neat ways, and I've seen it grow in some unfortunate ways. I remember, having been here 40 years, when we had a Republican on the county board. I'm not saying that the people that are there now are bad people, because they've done some really neat things. I'll freely admit that. My concern at this point is that there does seem to be a creeping lack of transparency. I don't know how many times I've been asked, well, yeah, what do you do about these Freedom of Information Act requests? We're trying to find out all this public information, except that we're told that we have to put in a FOIA request and then they stonewall us on it. I'm hearing that there are board meetings and people want to talk and they have to wait a long time in order to talk and then they talk and no one listens. They just don't seem to be getting through. Diversity is actually a good thing. Are Republicans saying that? Yes, it is. It's an outstanding thing. It's a wonderful resource. You need to use it. And we're not listening to the diverse people out here who have different ways of looking at the same thing, our city, but can give us some marvelous insight into what's going right, what's going wrong. We got to listen, and we're not. That's part of the reason why I wanted to get into this, because frankly, I want to see more done like that. And if that word gets out, my time is worth it just there, because that is something that this county really needs. I really appreciate the opportunity to participate in forums like this. I do have a website, bobcambridge.com. I would suggest that you look there, and if you want to talk to me, I'm at bcesq@verizon.net. I'm an attorney. BC is for Bob Cambridge. I would appreciate very much your comments, your criticisms, your gripes. Got nothing else to do with this COVID stuff going on. And I really would like to hear from people, frankly, because I know you've all got something important to say and I want to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you. Very well. Ms. Cunningham, just a moment here. Let me spotlight your video. Are you unmuted? Okay.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
All right, well, thank you, Alan, and to the Civic Fed for hosting tonight. I know it's been a scramble to get these debates together, but they're so important. I wanted to share why I am running for the special election Arlington County's board seat. I really believe that Arlington needs effective, practical, and effective leadership right now. Looking at budgets and priorities, they are not going to be easy decisions these next year and a half. We are going to be reinventing government as we execute, from public schools to business to government services. I bring an all Arlington, all life stages view and a future mindset to the board as a mother, a civic leader, and a business owner. I'm running as a progressive independent in this nonpartisan local election. I plan to be a transparent and trusted leader for Arlington voters, not for the party insiders or one party. I know Arlington across all of the life stages I've lived so far, as well as my family beyond that. I landed here in 1995 in Crystal City as a renter in a shared room. Then after a tour in Africa, came back to a shared townhouse in the East Falls Church neighborhood. And in 2003, when we got outbid on the Pike, we landed here just off of Lee Highway in Donaldson Run, where we own our home and are juggling two careers, two school-age daughters, and aging parents in both Roslyn and in Tennessee. In the time that I've lived in Arlington, Arlington has grown by nearly a third. Today, we're a $1.4 billion enterprise with nearly a quarter million diverse residents to serve. We're a big business that needs professional management. I will hit the ground running, bringing 25 years of experience managing businesses, government, and nonprofits through both crisis and change. From my engineering degrees to advising governments worldwide, I've been trained to absorb new information quickly, distill what matters most, and create solutions that get results quickly. I'm a data nerd, but the real magic is bringing people together to grapple with facts and ideals and get the right things done for Arlington without breaking the bank. I look forward especially to working with the Civic Federation on this and on creative problem solving. These are tough times, resources are tight, residents and businesses are struggling, and I'm excited to bring my experience to the county board at this critical time. I look forward to your questions and I hope to earn your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Okay, we'll now proceed to questions, and I'll just real quickly share the question format so everybody can see it. If I can get it up. Okay, there we go. So we'll ask a series of questions. Looks like we'll try and get to about five questions, then we'll open it up to the floor. Each question, I will ask it, and it will open, should take me about 30 seconds to answer each question. And then the first candidate, then the second candidate, and the third candidate, each will have 90 seconds to answer those questions. And this is the order for question number one, candidate number two will go first, question number two, candidate number three, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? Okay. All right, now my first question. As part of a policing reform measure, should resources be shifted toward human services? And so the first respondent to that will be Mr. Cambridge. Mr. Cambridge?
I think the honest answer is, the honest answer from an attorney, well, yeah, you should. Because I don't know. Because we do need the police function. I just saw today that there's some chaos going on in Seattle where the police have disappeared and there's no problems. Also, I do happen to believe that we've got a quite good police force. If there are bad apples, that's a problem. And that should be addressed. And it can be addressed, I believe, by proper training. It can be addressed by more oversight. It can be addressed by a licensing arrangement, which would allow you to pull bad apples out quickly. So there are ways of addressing this problem. But I do hesitate to say, let's just defund the police department. And my question then is, and replace it with what? Because that requirement is there. It's been there since medieval times and well before that. I mean, the Romans needed security too. And I am not convinced. I'm a criminal defense attorney, and I've had my fights with the police. But I've only once in 40 years seen an officer that I knew was lying. They don't do that. We've got some good people, and I'd like to support them. I don't like seeing that they are feeling defensive at a time when, frankly, they're still risking their lives to protect me and you. And we do need a better relationship with them. We need to work for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cambridge. Okay. Ms. Cunningham, would you care to answer the question? Would you like me to read it again?
No, that's fine. I believe that we have a lot of important conversations now underway and more to come about how we balance our spending for a variety of purposes, our police, our mental health support, our public health support, our schools, and emotional health, well-being and safety in our schools. What we've heard lately is really a cry for help, and we are all at the table, and I look forward to being at that table to understand what we have now, what is going well, what policies need to be adjusted, what training needs to be adjusted, and very importantly, looking at it across the entire budget of the county and the schools. What are we paying for? What are we getting? What is our intention and our priority? And how do we do better? I think particularly on the school resource officer issue and other places, we have a little bit of work to do, and I'm happy to be here with Dr. Duran today to look at, you know, school resource officers are in one budget, mental health for our children is in another budget. How do we do better across that whole spectrum, regardless of who is delivering the services? So absolutely important conversation. We need to look at it together. We need to look at it quickly, be driven by data and skill sets, and get the right folks and the right tools in the place to help our community.
Thank you. That was 2 seconds to spare.
I get bonus points.
Mr. Karantonis, would you care to answer? Would you like me to read the question again? You're muted, Mr. Karantonis. We can't hear you. Sorry.
I just unmuted. No, you don't need to repeat the question. It's an important question. It's in everybody's minds. But we have to focus on social justice right now, which actually will make our communities even safer. We need to continue to listen to our Black and Brown communities. Black lives really matter. So as a first step, I support instituting a civilian police review board. This is new for Arlington, it's new for us, and it is urgent. Also urgent is funding a body cam program and adopting policies that create trust in the community, but also protect our law enforcement officers. We have to re-examine our budget priorities to and ensure that the ACPD budget really reflects our values. So we have to prioritize training against racial and cultural biases, and we have to be methodical in collecting the data that allow us to identify and address disparities and understand what's going on. Also examining where, you asked about the human services. Yes, we have to look at mental health response aspects and aspects of community policing. Also the law enforcement presence in our schools that was mentioned before. That's all correct. Last but not least, and this is important, we need to make sure that we have a national search for the replacement of the retiring Chief FAR. This is a critical issue, and I believe that now more than ever, this is really urgent to do.
Thank you very much, Anton. All right. Our next question will be answered first by Ms. Cunningham, then by Mr. Karantonis, and then by Mr. Cambridge. And the next question is, there are trade-offs during any budget process, and COVID-19 will only increase pressure on our county's resources. Please indicate what county services or programs represent your top two priorities for the coming year and explain why.
Okay. Great. that's really quite easy. Like, our first priority absolutely has to be human services, making sure that our people are safe, that housing is retained, that jobs are created and supported, and that our children and families and residents are all fed. We need to do that again by having good collaboration across the schools and the county and with private sector and nonprofits to make sure that those services are delivered efficiently, they reach everyone, and that we take every piece of friction out of the system that we possibly can to make sure every dollar that we spend reaches our residents and supports their health and well-being. Secondly, we have got to focus on schools, both the operations and getting ready for the fall and pivoting to provide online school as well as in-person school, and then also planning for the future on our facilities and our capital program. If I had a chance to have three, I would also add stormwater infrastructure. We've got to get started there, and we absolutely need to begin that even during the crisis.
Thank you very much. Mr. Karantonis?
Am I muted? Okay. So I understand that we expect to deal with tough budgets because of COVID, and I'm very experienced in this. But they also, the budget also reflects the values we have as a community. So my two first things are people first, social safety net, and economic development. So COVID, with regards to social safety net programs, we need to focus on food security, health services, housing, unemployment, financial stability, eviction protection right now. No one should lose their home in Arlington. And we have to build on the current very good collaboration between government and nonprofits to address the needs of those who are suffering the most. I want to elevate this collaboration to a new level for the long term, actually. Economic development is needed to jumpstart our local economy. Small business support is important. I propose a revolving microloan program to help small and medium-sized businesses to get back on their feet, to keep their jobs, to create new ones and recover. We have to continue to be flexible and helpful in facilitating outside seating rules, flexible parking and zoning enforcement for safe retail to get our customers back, and rescuing Metro. I don't want to miss the opportunity to say that. Rescuing our public transit system. This is the lifeblood of our community, and we cannot afford to lose those.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cambridge?
It's a strange question. Policy, health and security and safety, obviously, is very high up there, and that is a fundamental job of the government. And yet, we're also talking about defunding the police without a good idea of where we're going to go from there. And I've got to say, COVID stress on our budget is obvious and is going to be profound and for a long time. We're going into a period where, you know, I honestly don't know what we can do as much as I would prefer to. Flexibility and an open mind and a readiness to listen and then change quickly if we have to is going to be the key words in this coming period, because we do need to continue to provide the services as best we can. We do need to continue to listen to the problems which are coming out there, which all too often we are not even aware of because people complain and the board has not been listening. And we need to have information out there from the board as to what is going on. The transparency has come to a head, and I think COVID may be an opportunity, because the need to get where are we coming from and why are we doing what we're doing, that's important. That needs to be explained. The people need to be along with us. And frankly, that has not been the policy in the past. So health and safety, number one. We've got a lot of other things we need to do, but we've got a real problem. We're going to have to be flexible and we're going to have to be creative. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. All right, our next question will be answered by Mr. Karantonis first. And that question is, given the need for COVID-19 precautions, what is your view on the role the county board should play in supporting safe and secure elections?
Thank you for the question. It's an important one. Let me preface this by saying that we are lucky to have an outstanding registrar and an election board in Arlington. not to mention the many volunteers and poll workers. The sticker "I voted in Arlington," which I collect, is also a salute to them. The board has a supportive role here, and it's mostly about money and places. So I really want to focus on seeing whether we have enough voting locations. Under COVID-19, we may think about distributing voters to more locations. I say this with a question mark. We have to look at the data, and if we do, we will need to see what kind of numbers of voters and volunteers we will be getting for these locations. This is not so easy. So it's a matter of early planning, and I'm talking about the November elections right now. And then something I feel very strong about, and I've advocated to the registrar many times, fund and open more in-person opportunity locations, not just courthouse, others as well. It worked very well in Walter Reed, and we should see if we can do more about that. Further, the board can stand behind promoting absentee voting and mail, vote by mail. Some suggested, and I heard that in the campaign trail, on the campaign trail, that the census outreach infrastructure should be used for that. It's in place, should be kept in place for this reason. In any case, it's a limited role for the county board, but still an important one.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Cambridge?
Yeah, I want to thank Dacus. I'm an election worker. I have been for more than 20 years now. Gretchen Rendemeyer is an outstanding registrar. And we've been talking, in fact, we worked earlier today about just how are we going to do this and maintain safety. And so the voting places are going to look a lot different. There will be a lot more social distancing. There will be masks, there will be sanitizer, there will be an awful lot of things that are going to address that issue. We're not going to handle the ballots. We're going to try to do a minimum amount of, it's going to be difficult. Everyone that comes in is going to get their own pen. We hope to give them back, but we're just going to toss them in a box and several weeks. We're not going to try to reuse any pens even. So the Board of Elections is already looking at this, and I think they're quite happy that the June 23rd election is going to be an outstanding trial run, because it will allow them to take a whole bunch of ideas, which they have put in place and are going to be practicing on June 23rd, and see how it works. There has been a lot of absentee voting over at Clarendon Avenue, and in fact, that particular site is something of a beta test for all this, too. Go on over and take a look and vote if you haven't already. But you'll see that they are trying very hard to deal with this COVID in a way that respects everyone's concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Cunningham?
Great. Thank you, Alan. The hallmark of a true democracy is safe elections, and especially during a time of crisis here in Arlington and concerns, frankly, about safe elections across the country. Well thought out solutions that are well implemented are super crucial to help all voters in this special election and the November election. I'm sorry, we're in the airplane flight path. You can hear that in the background. But we do still have many barriers for voters in our community, and the board should continue to vocally support the electoral board's efforts, encouraging requests for absentee and mail-in ballots, for curbside voting, and working with civic associations during COVID, our food distribution centers and schools and hospitals, to amplify the outreach and ensure that everyone feels safe and does vote. We should focus on reducing in-person wait times and lines while encouraging participation. We'll need to train staff, as we're starting to do, on the personal safety and social distancing, as well as providing PPE. And I have already had lots of conversations with Gretchen, and we are doing an incredible job innovating as we go. I think we had sort of a 30-day time period during which every election thing that could go wrong or could change happened. And we've remained nimble, creative, devoted, and I think we should absolutely celebrate our elections office and their great work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, our next question will be answered by Mr. Cambridge first. And this question is as follows. With technology such as license plate readers, police body cameras, facial recognition, and cell phone trackers becoming more common, what actions, if any, should Arlington County take with respect to data privacy and law enforcement oversight?
I've been a criminal defense attorney for some time now, and I frankly rather appreciate often the body cameras. But I also often engage in trying to suppress a lot of that stuff. And think about it. My client, the defendant, actually did this crime, and I'm trying to throw out the evidence that shows that he did it. Why would I do that? Well, because there was a violation of the rights, and if he doesn't complain about it, who's going to do it? And the Supreme Court agrees with that position. I mean, we need someone with a skin in that game to aggressively assert your rights, not just his. I'm finding that there are concerns, and I'm not sure how we're fully going to address that. The privacy issue is a very real issue, and frankly, some of this technology is getting a bit scary. I see them showing me a map where it shows where my client has been every inch of the way for the last week. What? You know, and they could do that for me too. Yes, they can. Oh my gosh. I got problems. I haven't really fully thought it out yet. The technology is a concern. I am aware of a lot of what can be done. I was intelligence way back in the 70s and CIA, so I know what we could even do back then, and they're far better at it now, I'm sure. It needs to be watched. And, oh, by the way, the citizens need to be told in more detail about what can be done, and we need to hear from them, because that's who really decides these things. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Cunningham?
Thank you, Alan. Yes, there's a lot of technology out there, and I've spent a good part of my career responding to new technology and helping governments use it effectively while preventing bias and improving outcomes for all residents. I think that the way forward, certainly on the body cameras and the police review board, those are very active conversations this week. We are likely to go ahead and move forward on both of those. And the most important piece on all of this, frankly, everything in government, is around transparency. We have a great tradition in Arlington of community engagement, over 50 commissions and advisory boards that support the board and the county manager. And right now, they're not meeting at all. Even before COVID, our open data advisory group, who is intended to advise the county manager on issues of data and FOIA and transparency, has not met in over a year. So we have a real gap there. We've fallen a little far from our Arlington way. And we're seeing it in the increase in FOIA requests that take a long time or are not completed. And we're seeing it, frankly, in some distrust about how our government is working. So I look forward to working closely with the NAACP, with Justice for Arlington, Black Parents of Arlington, the ACLU, the law enforcement community, and our residents to think through what is working now, what new technologies could support us, and then monitoring and refining as we go to make sure we're getting this right for Arlington and for all Arlingtonians.
Thank you. Mr. Karantonis?
Thank you for the question. This is really an important question because personal data privacy is an important civil right, especially in a world that is dominated by automation and rising use of artificial intelligence. There was some robust discussion on these issues here at the CIFED. I'm a member of the Legislative Affairs Committee, and I followed the resolution and the discussion about that, and I actually support the direction of this resolution. So enabling Arlingtonians free and equitable access to individual data sets is important and allow them to review and correct their data. We have to put a lot of emphasis in system transparency, knowing what is stored where, by what kind of system, who has access, and how can the citizen get to that, and scrutinize the existing and future system collaboration with private entities, like, for example, the collaboration of the police department with Amazon and, you know, the Ring doorbells. I believe that we are at a point in Arlington where we need to discuss to institute a chief data protection officer for Arlington County and establish regular reporting across all departments, including law enforcement. We have to develop clear protocols, and I agree, we have to work with, you know, our Emergency Preparedness Advisory Commission, Information Technology Advisory Commission. It's not helpful that they're not meeting right now, and with our General Assembly members because this is also a state law issue, which is important and affects us.
Thank you very much. Okay, our next question will be answered by Ms. Cunningham first. And the question is as follows. What is your view of density and zoning changes as they relate to housing affordability and availability in Arlington?
Great, thank you. Housing, again, is a fundamental need for every resident in the county, and housing diversity and choice matters a lot. I think, as I mentioned, I've lived in Arlington for a long time, quarter century, and in every arrangement from sharing a room in a high rise to sharing a townhouse in a single family home neighborhood to buying a home here adjacent to Lee Highway. And it is important that we have housing diversity all the way across the county where folks can have each life stage and each choice of how to live and with how many people to live and at different income levels across their entire life across all of Arlington. We do absolutely need to look at carefully calibrated, context-driven zoning adjustments, especially in transit corridors. Our zoning rules, which a Civic Federation has really kind of helped us create in the way old days and has helped evolve over time, we need to keep evolving them. And I think our conversations around race and equity highlight some of the challenges that we have of exclusionary zoning over the many years. We are still very much a single family home neighborhoods by area, but our residents, frankly, are many, many renters. About two thirds are renters and many in multifamily. And so we will need to allow a bit of change. Single family homes are an absolutely important option. We should not shrink the supply and drive the affordability through the roof there. We need to give folks choices and you know, here in my neighborhood, we've got 6,000 square foot homes, and then we've got little ramblers like ours, multifamily across the way. And my favorite experience of a neighbor at age 6 getting into the house was, where's the rest of the house? You know, each of us has different choices to make, and we can all live here happily, but we do need to have choice available to our residents.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Okay, and I'm sorry, Mr. Karantonis?
Yes, thank you. So, indeed, housing affordability is a critical challenge, one of the most important challenges for our community and our economy. We live in a supply-starved market that has been shedding affordable, market rate affordable housing for two decades. So we need to provide housing choices for all Arlingtonians at all price points. And no, personally, I have absolutely no intention to discuss wholesale changes of zoning because you asked about zoning changes for single family home neighborhoods. But corridor development is where we still have significant opportunities for additional efficient density. Density where supported by transportation, infrastructure and services is actually a tool to reach our goals. So it is on Lee Highway and Columbia Pike and Richmond Highway and the Rosenbaum corridor still. We talk a lot about the missing middle, and I believe that we have to continue the study that the Lee Highway Alliance is right now leading because we need a market-driven solution in appropriate locations with transportation and services again to further shore up our supply. So some zoning changes will be appropriate and will have to be considered. The Affordable Housing Master Plan, which I support, is a toolbox with a variety of solutions. The critical part is to continue investing in this toolbox. There is not just one single Swiss Army knife solution. It's a bunch of solutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Karantonis. Mr. Cambridge?
Yeah. The affordable housing initiatives, which have been going on for quite a while now, are only at about 50% of what they are trying to do. And frankly, even the plans themselves would not have met the need. And that's a real problem. And the missing middle is an entirely different issue. Here where I am, I guess, what, a $600,000, that's a lot of money. $600,000 house was torn down to build two $1.2 million houses. That is not a middle class house, and my gosh. So I'm not sure that we're actually addressing the proper question, and I don't know that we're doing it in the right way. I have touted the benefits of underground building just off the top of my head, because some time ago I was looking at that. There's a school out in Fairfax, Harrisette Elementary. It's underground. Why? Well, because underground building does tend to be less expensive, and because underground buildings don't require a heating in the wintertime. At Harrisette, they vent the heat because the student's body puts out too much of it. In the summer, the thing is cooler than it would otherwise be. So it costs less to build, and it costs less to for utilities. I think that's going in the right direction with respect to affordability. Where are we getting our affordable housing? Well, we're giving zoning benefits to contractors. There's certainly a demand out there, and I think if we can talk them into doing some of these more creative things, we'll get our density, we'll be able to support the transportation along those areas where there's density. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be on the corridors, because I have a lot of clients who have got to go a long way to get to a bus. That's a problem. So I'd like to see more creative thinking to get us where we all need, you know, all agree that we do need to get. I've gone over, I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Cambridge. Okay, so I'd like to now have some questions from the floor. If those who are in the audience could use the raised hand feature in the chat area, in the participants window, there's an option to raise your hand for questions. And I will go in order of the questions that the hands raised that I see. And I received one question already, and I see one other hand raised. So the first question, and this is from, crap, it already went away. Kit Norland, are you there, Mr. Norland? Or Ms. Norland?
Oh, yes. Yes, sorry. Hi, Alan. Yes. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, if you could keep the question to 30 seconds, please.
Very short, yes. I'm a retired diplomat. I lived in one-party states, and I love Arlington, but it's starting to feel like a one-party county. And I'm just wondering what the candidates can how they can reassure us that a really dynamic process will be incorporated into decision-making, as John Bystedt introduced recently, and we really need it again. What can they tell us about that?
Okay, and we're gonna have these questions. We're gonna continue the same sequence. And so that means, Mr. Karantonis, you're up first to answer this question.
I have quite I lived very close to one party states, and that is not Arlington. Arlington is not a one party state. There's nothing oppressive here. We're an open democratic society with very strong diversity and a huge influx of diverse opinions, a very educated place that values the other. And actually, I have to say, the way that Arlington has received me and my wife is a testimony to Arlington's amazing diversity in opinions, in approaches, in the ways of seeing things. We have open elections, and we are fighting hard, like right now. And we have a process that is open to everybody, and we have a good exchange of opinions. We have civic layers, civic associations, the civic federation here. We have our Arlington Way, which is suffering right now, and I'm one of those who are protesting that and raising the flag that we have to resume the meetings of our advisory commissions. So I don't think that we are in a one-party state at all. And on the county board, there is a lot of diverse. There are a lot of diverse opinions, and I'm coming to bring even more diversity into that.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Cambridge.
Well, I will disagree with Sackis on that one. And let's be data-driven. There are a huge number of FOIA requests that are coming in and are not being responded to. I keep hearing all these comments about a lack of transparency. And I know that the people on the board are not bad people, but there has been, for whatever reason, this drift toward lack of transparency, lack of openness, lack of bringing in the ideas and the comments of the people who live here, and frankly, are right there on the street where they are seeing what's going on their street, and that's information that the board needs to hear, and they're not hearing it. So while if you've got all Democrats, well, they're all still independent people and they all still see things different ways, but you are going to get more diverse views if they're all not white, if they're all not Democrats, if they're all not old guys, if they're all, not all young people, if they're not all male, if they're not all female. Anything that you do to increase the diversity of that board has got to be a good thing from my perspective. And that's why I do disagree with Akos on that one. I think that we need to open up, and we're just not doing that. I, after your vote, I think that that is the way to start this process of opening it up some more. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Cunningham?
Yeah, I think it's a really important question. Our elections, our local elections in Virginia are by law nonpartisan. You won't see a D or an R or an I on a ballot in a local election. And that is because local politics is really about local stuff. It's not, I think Kennedy said, we need not a Republican solution or a Democratic solution, we need the right solution. Potholes aren't Democratic, aren't Republican. We just have to get it right for our community. And I do worry that we currently have, it's not just a lack of diversity of thought, but a beholdenness to a single party machine that can get in the way of making good decisions, particularly making bold leadership choices, to listening well, to fully representing everyone. And that is why I'm running as a progressive independent in this race. I do want to bring a practical, fresh perspective. I want to bring bold leadership that is responsible to the voters and not to a party. I just would beg to differ with Mr. Frantonis. We are factually a one-party system currently, in that every single elected official was first blessed by ACDC. And in fact, many of our neighbors have received notes from Mr. Frantonis this last couple of weeks saying, that Bob and I see blood and are working to steal the seat. It's just a lot of drama for a local election. And I really think our voters should decide. It is not about Trump coming for Virginia. It's about making good budget decisions and having a community that we're proud of. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. The next question will be from Keith Fred. Mr. Fred, are you ready?
Yes. Hi. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and thank you all for participating tonight. What would you do to slow and control growth to make sure the county has the infrastructure, including green open space, available to make sure the quality of life for existing residents is not only sustained but improved?
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Cambridge, that you're up for the answering this one first.
Appreciate the comment about the nexus between green and quality of life, because the trees in Arlington, the canopy is magnificent, and it's what attracted us to this area. And I agree with the fact that we've lost 40% of that canopy since 2006. The advantages of living in Arlington are not in dispute, and I don't see us stopping the growth. I just don't. And frankly, it's not my place to tell people they can't live here. But I would like to see look at the situation and try to provide the housing that people need in a way that doesn't turn us into solid block of multi-story buildings and nothing else. There is going to have to be some concessions, and there probably is going to be a lot more development along the corridors. Why? Well, because the transportation's there, and you do kind of need transportation around here. It's a big advantage. I take the metro and the ART bus and the Q bus out in Fairfax all the time. Why? Because it's a great way to go. You don't have to drive, and you don't have to pay for parking. And affordability. I mean, the public transportation system is a very important part of that package. So we're not going to stop it, but we do need to look at what we can do to do it in a way that is not going to destroy the ambiance, which has been and can still be Arlington. This of underground housing. I mean, it sounds a little flaky maybe, but I there are other options out there too. I would really like to hear from people who are thinking about this problem, because those ideas are what are going to make a huge difference. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Cunningham?
Yes, I mean, growth, I think, is on all of our minds. We've been growing really rapidly. Like I said, we've grown by a third since I moved here, which doesn't seem that long ago, but it was. And I think the trick is looking at growth as both opportunity and challenge, and making sure we're not saying, you know, absolutely no growth, or grow is the only thing we can do. We need to be very context-driven and thoughtful about where we encourage growth, including along the transit corridors, and where we slow it down. And in particular, we need to balance growth and livability. You know, our neighbors in 22202 down in National Landing are facing a very sudden, you know, supercharged growth with the arrival of Amazon. And they have done a fabulous job of coming together as multiple civic associations and community groups to think about what is important, how do we want to live here, and to engage both the private sector and the government in doing so. And we will need to continue to do more of that. I think finally, when we think of the future, we need to think of the stormwater, the parks, the schools, again, all as a challenge and an opportunity, a network of green that connects all of our places and our distinct neighborhoods together, and respects and honors the environment, manages the growth to be sustainable, and delivers a quality of life that supports all of our residents.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Mr. Karantonis?
Thank you for the question. Arlington has one of the best records in the nation in managing growth. We are very proud of that, because we achieved great things with that. As CIPRO executive director, I participated in the planning of a corridor, the Columbia Bike Corridor, and the implementation of two form-based codes with high citizen participation, long-term planning, good predictability for neighbors and developers. When we combine housing and transportation and open spaces and public facilities to deliver services efficiently, when we plan right for our schools, we are really good at this in Arlington, and we should continue this way. I continue to advocate for corridor development, which is where the efficiencies are, and where we, growth is not a policy of the Arlington County government. Growth is something that the market and our economy demands from us. So making it possible to grow is really something that is essential to our long-term viability. Imagine the opposite, which is not somehow an equilibrium or so, it's actually decline. So the problem is to manage that, and we do that very well. Livability is a critical addition to what we see now with our neighborhoods. And I think on the Richmond Highway, we see some very good thinking about that.
Thank you very much. Okay, the next question, it's in the chat, it's from Ed. Ed, are you on? Can you identify yourself and your association, please? Okay. We will skip Ed. And then the next question is from Mr. Bernie Byrne. And this will, we'll have two more, this one and then the last one after him. So yes. Mr. Byrne.
Yes, there's a question about parks. And if you've been around Arlington long enough, you'll know that we have a paving the parks program. Every time they do a parks project, they add cement. Now, right now we're facing a problem, a big problem with WWE Trail, where Regional Parks is asking for funding from announced from Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to widen the WWE Trail, which will wipe out, it's a large part of a major meadow area, a wildlife corridor. And they were a movement going on to promote this. So the majority of the respondents said yes. What are your ideas on the WV Trail widening project? Should it be done or not?
Okay.
Yes or no?
First question to answer that is Ms. Cunningham.
Absolutely. I think it is. It's a question that requires a little bit more conversation than just a yes or a no. We do need additional recreational trails throughout all of Arlington and a network of trails that connects them. Our first instinct, I love the paving the parks program. Our first instinct is concrete or asphalt often is cheap, it's durable, and we often go there. But the context really matters, and the WNOD is where it is because it's in the floodplain or it's along a stream. And in those particular areas and where there are special environmental opportunities like re-meadowing and protecting wildlife, we need to be a little bit more thoughtful about what the options are. You know, it's not just black and white. It's not just yes or no. There are ways to provide additional capacity, whether it's crushed stone or a separate, you know, kind of mountain bike-like trail that can honor the environment, that can be part of a stormwater and watershed plan and can move us forward. I don't love the idea of just paving it all over and assuming that's okay. I think we need a much more elegant solution than that, and it requires more conversation than we've had so far, more coordination across NOVA parks, county, and schools in order to get it right for Arlington.
Thank you very much. Mr. Karantonis.
Thank you for the question. This is a project combining having a significant improvement in our trails and our connections was part of our plans for quite a while. Now that doesn't mean that we have to pave the parks. That means that we have to proceed carefully and ask for environmental assessments every time that we do a major intervention like this. So I would support to ask for a full environmental assessment and to see also what other alternatives there are in order to make sure that we have more pervious surfaces, that for example, the pedestrian facility there is more pervious, and that that we maintain most of the trees that would otherwise be sacrificed to that. We don't have to do that. We can do it better. I also think that one of the critical aspects there is to maintain the ecosystem as it is there. I think that cyclists will agree with me that we have to have this conversation, plan carefully and execute carefully as well. Not everything that's right now on the plan should actually put into the construction of that, but nevertheless, having good cycling connections is an asset. It takes thousands of car trips out of our roads, and it lowers our carbon footprint. That's also something that needs to be balanced in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cambridge.
One of my biggest problems with politicians in general is that they'll tell you whatever you want to hear. The acid test is how they're going to do it. My wife and I have a tandem bike, and we bike all over the place. It's nice, and we've got a lot of trails, and that's kind of nice. But the question does point out a real problem. Everything that you do has some up and some downside, and frankly, it sounds like the downside here wasn't even considered. Why not? I mean, the individual asked the question is probably part of Arlington tree people. Arlington, there's several groups, and they've been quite active and quite vocal. The problem is they're also quite frustrated because they'll ask, hey, you had a park plan and you were going to budget to increase the park space, and you've never put that in the budget in the 5 years or so since you had that plan. Why not? And now we're in the COVID situation where there's no money, even if we could turn them around. They have got to stop making promises and not following it up. And they've got to start listening to the people who care about this stuff, because if you've already paved over a nice little meadow, you've paved it over, and you've done some real damage. That is a problem, and that is the current arrangement, which is not being taken care of. What's the fix? Listen to the people and give them an opportunity to have a meaningful input before you make that decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cambridge. Okay, we'll have one more question, and then we'll have closing statements. And this question is from Nancy Springer. Nancy, would you like to ask your question?
Yes, thank you very much. Nancy Springer from ARCA. Now, what's your position on developers offering community benefits in exchange for bonus density? Have you thought about what your exchange rate is going to be? Now, for example, one community center equals X number of feet of bonus density.
Thank you. And the first person up is, I'm getting my orders mixed up. Mr. Karantonis.
Sure. So this is a very good question, and it's part of the development process in Arlington, which I happen to know quite well. Indeed, we ask the developers to contribute to the community and to mitigate the impact of their development, and also provide community benefits in general. So they get additional density, but also other zoning variances in order to be able to develop bigger projects. So that's we have a thorough process for that. We have a planning commission. We have another housing commission. We talk about all types of impacts. And I think that we have done in Arlington a very good job with that, with these requests. Remember also that we also have to balance not only what we ask immediately from a developer upfront from the building, but also in the long-term improvement and the value that goes into the land and produces a higher tax rate over many, many years. I live close to a place that was developed just about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. It was paying $150,000annual tax, and now it pays $1.7 million. So that's a great place to start this conversation from the economic point of view.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cambridge?
Contractors are businesses, and businesses are the bottom line. These negotiations are looking at a trade-off, some flexibility, some maybe even zoning waivers in return for something that we want. This has been driving the affordable housing process all along. Good. But there are other benefits that can be brought in. I'd like to see more, don't take that tree down. And oh, by the way, fella, you can sell that house for $2,000, $3,000 more if that big old oak is still there. Those trees have got some value. Talk to A, B, and C, who are contractors who have already realized this, because I think you're probably going to believe them more than you're going to believe me. That's what they say, that keeping these trees in place makes a difference. This is a negotiation. And frankly, I think that negotiation ought to be set up prior to going in and doing the negotiation. Before we do the negotiation, we need to talk to the people who are being affected by this and find out what they want to see come out of that negotiation. That's not being done. That's the piece that's missing. And frankly, I think there'd be a lot of good ideas and a lot of good suggestions and a lot more marbles on the table that we could make better use of in that negotiation if we did try to bring in the community, the people who care, and different civic organizations that really do have issues that are real and that make a difference. And they have not been heard. They have not been heard. That's not right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Cunningham?
I think it's a really great question. And unfortunately, like the last one, there's not a simple formulaic answer. We don't always need a community center. So the value of a community center depends on what our need is at that moment. But absolutely, I would start with an approach that says any additional density has to be a good deal for Arlington, a good deal now and a good deal long term. And that means that when you consider whether to allow additional density, and the value of that to monetize it, as you said, you have to think about, you know, what additional school capacity are we going to need? And does this cover that? Can we have a proffer or other contribution to school capacity? Same for infrastructure like water and sewage and stormwater and all the sexy fun engineering stuff. We have to be able to pay for those. And it's not just a matter of, you know, did you check a box that you provided access to a park or did you put money into the Affordable Housing Investment Fund? It's got to pencil out for our community for now and for the future. And that is a more complicated question. There is a formula kind of approach to it, set of questions and a set of priorities that we have in the county. But absolutely each development and each additional compromise that we give to a developer has to be funded, has to be a good deal for Arlington.
Thank you very much. Okay, so that's it for questions. And thank you everybody for all the questions you submitted. And we'll now proceed to closing statements. And we're gonna go in the reverse order of the opening statements. So Ms. Cunningham will go first, then Mr. Cambridge, and then Mr. Karen Thomas. Okay, so that'll be 1 minute each, please. And Ms. Cunningham, go ahead.
Okay, great, thank you, Alan. These are challenging times and there's more challenge that lies ahead. I really believe that we need bold, independent leadership to steer us through this storm. I bring the executive experience to balance long-term plans with immediate progress, to ask tough questions, and to bring our people and board and staff together to innovate and get the right things done for Arlington quickly. I'm a parent and a civic leader, deeply committed to balancing our growth, housing, environment, transportation, and schools. I'll bring context-informed results, not one-size-fits-all rhetoric, as I did while leading the Ham Middle School project, the Stratford Historic Interpretation, and as a member of the founding member of the Joint Facilities Advisory Commission. I will prioritize transparency and accountability and much improved school and county collaboration. I'll bring people and data together to get things done for Arlington now and for the future. And most importantly, as a small business owner and large business advisor, I'll anchor every discussion and decision in fiscal responsibility.
Thank you.
Thank you for the forum. Thank you to the moderator. I ask for your vote for those at home. I look forward to bringing a fresh perspective. Please learn more at susanfortarlington.com.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Mr. Cambridge?
No, it's not my place to tell you what you need. It's your place to tell me what I need. And it's you who ought to be saying, are you satisfied with what's going on so far? If you have an idea, if you see a problem, has anyone listened? Have you gone to a commission meeting and waited 3 hours in order to be able to talk and then made any difference whatsoever? Are you getting ideas to the people who are implementing these ideas? I don't think that's happening. And frankly, given the stress on our budget, which we know is coming down the pike, we have got to get more bang for every buck to survive this thing. And we're not going to get it by five people getting together in a closed room and deciding how we're going to run our lives, because they can't possibly know as many creative things that could be done that could make this better than 250,000 Arlington citizens who are wonderfully creative and have proven it and who have a lot of ideas. I didn't heard them and they're not being followed up. That's the problem. And I ask for your vote, because this is an election where we can start to get this thing going in the right direction. It's late, but it's got to be done, because the stresses that our system is going to run into require creative thinking, more creative thinking, and we haven't had it yet. I thank you very much for the opportunity to talk, and I appreciate it. By the way, I'm BCEFQ at Verizon.net. I'd love to hear any of your comments and criticisms, and please look at bobcambridge.com. It's online.
Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Karantonis.
Thank you, Sifet, for having us tonight. Give me 30 seconds to address some Arlingtonians who are not the majority in this audience. Tengo 30 segundos por un cierre un poco menos convencional. Sé que algunas y algunos de ustedes están presentes esta tarde, pero no se sienten representados. Postulo a la Junta de Condado de Arlington precisamente para brindarles un regreso de representación que ustedes se merecen, como ciudadanas y ciudadanos, vecinas y vecinos, en igualdad con todos los demás. My immigrant status has deepened my love and investment in Arlington.
My professional and extensive grassroots volunteer work reflect my passion for issues, for good local governments, and for building our community. I've been endorsed by the Sierra Club, the Greater Greater Washington, Blue Virginia, among many others. I pledge to work for you and with you 110%, and to bring my life experience to the board so that we emerge out of these challenging times together, stronger and more resilient. So I'm asking for your support and your vote on July 7th. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Karantonis. Thank you to all of our candidates. Thank you for accepting our invitation and for presenting this evening and for answering our questions. And thank you to everybody in the Civic Federation who's participated and asked the question this evening. The recording of this debate will be posted as well as the overall meeting itself on our website when we get it all compiled, so sometime the next day or two. And then there's additional information available from each campaign on their own individual sites. So thank you again, candidates, for joining. And we will now move on to the next item in our agenda, which is our brand new Superintendent of Arlington County Public Schools, Ms. Dr. Francisco Duran. Dr. Duran, I know that you're on. And Michael Beer, I'm gonna turn it over to you, Michael, real quickly. Do you want to make an introduction? You need to unmute yourself first. Michael, unmute. There you go.
Welcome to Arlington, Dr. Francisco Duran. We are absolutely delighted to have you as our new superintendent. We have one of the best school districts in the world. We're very proud of it. It's been a challenging 12, 15 years of incredibly huge, fast growth, and I think we've managed it reasonably well, but it's been very challenging. And now we have some additional challenges, as we know, at this time. But we're very confident in our staff and our community, and we couldn't be more delighted that you've joined us as our new superintendent. Dr. Duran has a diverse background in education spanning 26 years, including top-level leadership and superintendent experience in a variety of large urban school divisions with culturally diverse populations. He has served in various roles as a teacher, director, principal, administrator, and superintendent. In 2018, Dr. Duran was appointed to the Virginia State Board of Education, where he played a key role in the adoption of the new standards of quality for Virginia. Dr. Duran has replaced interim superintendent Cynthia Johnson, for whom we're most grateful for her service, who has led the school division in the last year, and she has returned to her role as the assistant superintendent of administrative services. Dr. Duran, thank you so much for joining us. We will now move the speaking to you, where you'll give us a presentation, and then we'll have time at the end for a few questions. So all right. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. All right. So I did put together a brief presentation, and I know in lieu of time, I can go quickly through this. I guess, Alan, you'll have to control the slides. Is that how that works?
Yes, if you don't mind.
So we can quickly go through the next slide. First of all, I just want to say it's a pleasure to be here. And I know that we're spending some time providing a little presentation, and I hope there'll be a chance for some questions, but I look forward to the opportunity to come back and engage in more dialogue, and look forward to the opportunity to continue to engage, to be a part of the community in a way that is listening and learning. Been here 2 weeks now in terms of in the role that I'm in. And so I'm still listening and learning, but at the same time, have to hit the ground running on reopening of our schools. And so just wanted to provide a little bit of information on that, and then again, open up for some questions. So right now, as many of you know, the governor has been phasing in both the economic side of what can happen, but we also have an educational phase in for return to schools that was just released last week. So we have been following that guidance as of last week, and there's information on our website where you can see about that. The guidance really just provides for, at this point, we're in phase two, which is really guidance around our summer opportunities. And then the fall, which would be phase three, we're not yet in phase three, but we're beginning to unpack that guidance to move forward to that. All of the guidance provides us with really what we could do, but then there is opportunity for us to be flexible and not go that far if our conditions in our county don't meet that in terms of health requirements. Next slide, please. As we're looking at the data and we're looking at the guidance, there's a couple of things that are really important. Number one for us is that we will have safety and health considerations first and foremost when we think about our students and staff coming back and what way they'll come back in the fall. We have to make sure that we have access to technology and internet, and we're fortunate that we have a good plan on that, and I'll share that with you in a moment. And then obviously we want to make sure that we're phasing in a way where we have staff and students that still may not be able to come back due to higher risk categories that they're in, and what opportunities do we have to support them in that transition and being flexible with that. So with our access for technology, I want to highlight that. We did receive CARES Act funding from the US government that was one-time dollars. We dedicated those dollars, which were about 1.8 million that we received. We dedicated that to purchase devices for our K to two students. We already had devices for third grade through 12th grade so that we would be able to now have K through 12th grade, everyone with the device. We were able to use most of the CARE dollars, CARES Act money for that purpose. And that's important because as we return back in the fall in person, we still will not be able to be fully in person for everyone at the same time, given some of the health requirements to be 6 feet apart and to have the social distancing piece. And so as we look at that, and then again, as I just said a minute ago, some students will not be able to come back in person fully because of their risk that they have as a category about their health. And so we wanted to make sure we had access to technology that way. Then we also were fortunate to partner with the county government, who have been working with us on an agreement to provide funding for us to purchase 1 year of Comcast internet service for families that qualify. And we're really thankful to our county partners for doing that, because that will allow us, through the funding they provided, that every family who qualifies to be able to get that 1 year service with Comcast. We have families that may not qualify based on that income level, and we do have a device called a MiFi that we can provide to students and families who are in that middle range, because you know the qualifications for families are, when we think about Northern Virginia and particularly Arlington, the cost of living, you may not qualify based on that, but you may not have enough funding to also then be able to provide internet for your families. There's a middle ground there for considerations of families that qualify that don't take into consideration higher cost of living areas like ours. Next slide, please. As I said a minute ago, as we're thinking about looking at reopening, here's a variety of things that have been put in place. I'm not gonna read this list to you, but things that we must consider. And the first primary one is that we will not be able to all be in classes the way we were. And as of March 13th, the last day we were, we must consider that we have to have 6 foot distance among students and staff. And for obvious reasons, we don't have classroom space that's that size to fit a class of, let's say, a traditional class size of 24, let's say. You could not put all 24 6 feet apart in a classroom. So we're having to think about how do we work on different hybrid models and schedules. And then there's a variety of other things that the governor and working with our local health department, as well as the Virginia Health Department, that we have to consider and we're working on. Next slide, please. We did, for our summer learning, that there was the possibility for us to have in-person limited services for our vulnerable populations. And the word vulnerable population was defined by the governor specifically. We did not define that. That was defined as pre-K to third grade, English learners, and students with disabilities. After looking at that and consulting with our health guidance and looking at the ability that we would able to turn that around and the staff that we would have, we opted to continue for this summer the distance learning program with new instruction to take place. We did, because of the guidance, look back at our initial plan, and we did provide some additional supports for those vulnerable populations as were outlined in the guidance. And so we have English language development course for our secondary English learners and those students that are in their beginning years of learning English, having a synchronous distance learning opportunity. We also increased for our kindergarten to third grade the number of check-ins with their teachers to make sure that they were getting more support virtually. And then the students with disabilities, we have a robust virtual online experience. We were also able to work and get an additional waiver that will allow us to continue all of our summer feeding that we've been doing thus far in the same sites that we've had thus far. And that required us to get a waiver based upon, normally you have to look at the percentage of students who qualify for free and reduced lunch, and if you don't have a waiver, we weren't able to do that. Next slide, please. And so right now we're in the phases of thinking about what will the fall look like. We've thought of three scenarios. One would be full distance learning, and we have to plan for that, because if we do not leave out of phase two in the governor's plan, we're not allowed to do in-person learning. In-person learning is only in phase three. Now the governor has said in many statements, and the state superintendent has said, they do anticipate we would move to phase three potentially in August. But so we can't wait till August to prepare for that. So we are thinking about that, and that would be the hybrid in-person and distance learning model, where we would have students coming in at smaller groups on some days, and some then being learning distance-wise, and then vice versa. So we're looking at those models. As we're looking at those models, we are coordinating and working with all of the regional superintendents from our Northern Virginia counties. We want to try as much as possible to have a plan that's a Northern Virginia plan. We do have staff, and about 50% of our teachers do not live in Arlington County, and staff. And so if they live in other counties and they have students of their own that are in those counties and their schedules are different than ours, that would be a challenge. And so we're really looking at that. We've established work groups, which are staff work groups in four areas to look at instruction, operations, our activities, extracurricular activities like sports and athletics and communications. And those work groups are working within our staff as well as collaborating with county staff and our health department to look through all this guidance and determine and find proposals and recommendations for what it would look like. And then we have a stakeholder task force, which is about 35 members who are then able to look at and receive that thinking and that guidance from our work groups and provide us their feedback on suggestions. So, for example, this week we provided them an overview of all the different hybrid models. For example, students come one day on, one day off, another group comes one week, another group the next week. So providing those different scenarios for them to provide feedback on, and that's what we're still working with them on. Next slide, please. The task force, I'm not gonna read it, but here is the list of the different advisory groups that those individuals came from. About 7 to 10 teachers, 7 to 10 parents, 5 to 6 students, representing all of the various communities in our county. Next slide. We have sent out some surveys to our staff, students, and families that we've just had those closed today. And so we're working to have all of that information unpacked so we can get an idea from families of what worked well, what didn't work well during the distance learning that had just happened in this fourth quarter. And what are their areas of concern and wondering about reopening? What is their comfort level about different models? And so we're getting all of that information this week compiled so that we can review that, so that we can be able to inform our decisions. We also, I have established with the school board that every school board meeting, we will have a monitoring report where we can share out that information. I have begun every Tuesday, we'll be sending out a community update on where we are with suggestions and things that are happening and links to information. So every Tuesday, there will be a weekly communication from me. We have an engage page that's established where people can go on and see all of this information in one spot and also can ask questions or send suggestions. And there's the email on the bottom of this slide if people are interested in asking a question or sharing a suggestion. Next slide. So this is our timeline of where we're trying to land with hopefully the end of this month, maybe the beginning of July. We had put this plan together when we thought the governor's guidance would come to us sooner. It came a week later than was expected. So we're working towards that. And then again, as I said, working with our regional partners in the Northern Virginia to try and come up with a plan. So that is what our hope is by the end of June or beginning of July, at least to have a framework. We won't have all the details. And then we also have to plan for the different scenarios because we've been given guidance and we've all seen, I'm sure many of you, that there's potential other waves coming later on that we may have to revert back to another plan. So the good news is that we're able to have this time to really think all these options because what occurred in March was no time for planning. It was just all of a sudden we had to close schools and we weren't given the opportunity to really think that through. So now we have that opportunity. Go ahead and next slide. So that's about reopening. The other thing that's really raised an awareness for us and a concern for us to pay a lot of attention to is the things that we have seen and occurring in our community, in our national community, where we have seen on the media and the protests that have occurred. For many communities, this is not something that they've experienced new. For many, it's just now being discussed and brought into the media. But for others, it's the first time we're actually having this conversation. So we have a lot of students, a lot of parents, a lot of staff who have been concerned about what we will do to respond to that. And so we are working on providing more professional development for our staff on how to respond to this. We also are going to next Monday night at 7 o'clock have a beginning of a series of conversations in the community where we will talk about this and hear from the community their concerns and suggestions. And we're starting that series of conversations, and it's called Let's Talk, where we do need to hear and understand what we can do to respond to what's happening. And again, not necessarily here in our community, there may be things here in the community, but also just how to respond overall. And parents are asking us help to give guidance and feedback on how do I talk about these things with my students who are now very concerned and a lot of anxiety and a lot of just wondering about what to do in this time. Next slide, please. So for our budget, as many of you know, there this was not when I was here, but prior to me coming, the interim superintendent had put together a proposed budget with a lot of the needs, and was the first time that the school system had done a needs-based budget where they actually listed all of the things based upon the standards of quality that referred to that I was a part of helping adopt at the Virginia State Board of Ed. So really looking at all that, that was pre-COVID. After that, of course, with the severe reduction in the amount of funding coming and the county's ability, there had to be a revision of the budget where we were not able to put forth those things. And so the school board did adopt a much reduced budget this last month. Next slide. We also just got off a work session on the CIP where we are normally would be doing a 10-year capital improvement plan. This year we're doing a 1-year short term. Then next spring we'll be doing a 3 to 6 year plan. And then hopefully working with the county, we would return to a typical 10-year capital planning process in 2022. And so this is a really important part of our work and working with all of you in the community to understand what our needs are, but also from an instructional perspective, what do we need to build in terms of our spaces for our families and our students to have the quality education that they currently do and to enhance that even further. So we're looking at that, and I'm sure that many of you on this meeting are gonna be interested in seeing how that unfolds and being a part of that conversation. Next slide. The fluidity of our economic situation currently has made us really impossible to forecast a lot beyond this year, so that's what we're focusing on this year. However, we are still doing our enrollment estimates, and we expect to add another 1,100 students, which will bring us by 2020-21 to almost 30,000 students. And for those of you who have been in Arlington a long time, you know that's a huge growth, because if you think back just a few years when the system had 10,000 students, that's almost double or triple if you go down to 10,000 in a very short amount of time. So while we have our increase of students and we have a decrease or lack of additional funding, the CIP process is really, really important for us to consider long-term. And this year we didn't really get into looking at that long-term because it's a 1 year, but certainly the next one for the 3 to 6 year and then the 10 year are gonna have some hard conversations, important conversations, and ones that are gonna help us think about this increase. Next slide, please. And that is the last part of my presentation. I tried to go quickly. I probably didn't go as quickly as I could have, but a lot of good information on us for us to consider. And as I said to Michael and Alan, I would love to please come back and talk more, not just about reopening of schools. That's like what we're all focused on now. And it's an important topic, certainly. But I know there's so much more to what we need to do and what we can do for our students and our community. We have just been having to focus on this for now. So I appreciate the time to share a little bit of updates with you on where we are. And again, really just mostly appreciate the opportunity to be here with all of you to introduce myself in my second week here in Arlington. So thank you for that. And I will turn it back to Michael or Alan, I'm not sure who may have some questions and be able to open up questions I don't know what the agenda is and the time was, so I'll turn it back to you. And I'm here as long as you would like me to be, and I'm able to be. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, Michael, about 10-ish minutes of questioning.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Duran. Thank you so much. Terrific presentation. I'll read out a number of questions because of limited time, and then you can answer as best you can the questions that our schools committee has come up with. Tell us what the purpose of the public schools mean to you, and how will you use this vision to guide our school system? How do you plan to deliver equitable distance learning to all students should schools remain closed? What support is planned for teachers, particularly around teacher training for distance learning? And what is your vision for the delivery of services, particularly for the gifted, SPED, reading in elementary school for APS?
A lot of questions. I hope I'll remember them. I didn't write them down. So, let me start by saying that I do think that the purpose of public education is for us. I think public education is a critical, important aspect of our community success. It's our opportunity to help prepare all of our students. I think it's the role that we play to help prepare students for the future. And I think it's our role to play, and my vision in that is to really think about the future and think about it in a way that is not something that even all of us on this call can even imagine. We have to be innovative, we have to be thoughtful, and we have to help prepare students now differently than most you and I were prepared when we were in school. When we were in school, there was a different world ahead of us. Now we need to really think as the around the concept that, you know, the Virginia profile of a graduate, I love that, having been a part of that process, that really helps define that for me, public education is how do we help prepare students with those skills that they need to be good collaborators, problem solvers, how to analyze, critically think, be good citizens, make good decisions around what good citizenship and global citizenship means, and to really think about their place, not only in their immediate community, but to think of ourselves in terms of the international community that we're a part of, really, really critical part of that process. For many of us, when we went to school, we learned, you know, content, and we, for many of us, we have memorized facts, and it was important for us to know those facts, and a lot of us may have done a lot of opportunities where we had to really just learn about things, and we really did not then or weren't expected to analyze or problem solve with that. And for most of you who are working in jobs, I don't think most, or who have retired or are currently or know people that work, most jobs don't ask you to just tell them facts. Part of your ability to be a successful person in your job, whatever it may be, isn't just spitting out information. It's applying that information. It's working with other people. It's problem solving. It's analyzing. And I've said those over and over again on purpose because that I want you to know is my vision and for what public education is all about. In terms of what we're going to do for distance learning, which I think was your second question, I kind of highlighted that a little bit already, or it was important for us to make sure we had devices for every student for the hybrid aspect and to make sure we have connectivity for students and families that cannot afford it. And so we have done those things I've already mentioned. I won't repeat that. Also, I think important is to help prepare our teachers for how do they engage in a new type of learning. So school ended last Friday. We ended it early. Earlier, it was supposed to end this week for our teachers. And this whole week, we have teachers engaged in professional development around what they can need to learn and help them to work through this process. For all of us, it's new. It's very, very new. And so we're still learning as we go through this process. But for me, it's about making sure we have the tangible materials that we need, which are the devices and the curriculum. We also are having to work with teachers because in this last fourth quarter in Arlington, it was decided not to do new instruction. And so students didn't learn the content. And so for me, that's very important that we not let that go by. So we are identifying what are the key essential standards. Now we can't go back and reteach everything that would have been taught in the same way in fourth quarter, but what were the essential standards in the core curricular areas that should have been taught, and how do we help teachers to build those into the upcoming school year? So that's another thing that we need to do. That's a very important process for us. And then I don't remember your last two questions. Sorry, I remember the first two. So
you got it.
I've written them down, but I shouldn't have written them down. Sorry about
that. That's right. You got a substantial amount of them. I want to open it up to the floor.
Okay.
Very important. If you'd like to ask a question, please feel free to type it in or raise your electronic hand. I do see a question from Miriam Gennari, which is, what is your position on environmental literacy, and is it important to have an outdoor learning program?
I'm a big supporter of environmental literacy. I think environmental literacy, media literacy, those are the types of skills that we need to build when we're going to think about a global citizen, a community member, helping students to understand the importance of that. And I think having an outdoor learning program is an important supplement to something that we need to do and imagine that our classroom is not just in four walls in the traditional sense. So I hope you've heard from me a few things about me. That means I'm not a traditionalist in every way. There are traditional aspects that need to be in place. But for me, environmental literacy and outdoor learning is very important when we think about students being able to be productive citizens, global citizens, and be able to be contributing positive citizens. Environmental literacy is going to be key in that. And so how do we help develop that? And I added into that, what wasn't part of the question, but media literacy as well, because I see both of those as two areas that sometimes we don't think are part of instruction, but really need to be a part.
We have a question from Richard Epstein. Not all students are looking to go to college. What is your approach to students who are looking to leave high school with marketable skills?
That's precisely emphasizing why I said that we need to build those skills, and we need to help students think about problem solving, critical thinking, how to analyze. And I think that you're right. We don't want to necessarily say that all children have to go to college. However, I do believe it's important that we create the space and the trajectory for students to be able to make that choice. And I think we should prepare all students as if college is an option, but there are so many other areas where we have, even right in our backyard, you know, in the last district that I worked in, and some of the work I've done with the state, we have seen a lot of things like cybersecurity, things happening in the technological field and area where you don't necessarily have to go to college, and actually there's some learning there that's going on that's really important to apply through credentials and certifications that are phenomenal. And actually, when we analyze some of that type of learning and the assessments that students have to take to acquire those credentials and certifications, we actually mapped out that some of that was even higher level than college in terms of some of the learning that has to happen there. So I don't like to approach it as, are you going to college or not going to college? It's everyone, that's an option, but there are other options. And how are we helping you build those foundational skills to prepare yourself for whatever your choice and your pathway will be? And I love that Arlington uses that term pathway. It's really, really important that we do that. And we've just been discussing that in the last work session I got off of the CIP. How do we think about pathways, you know, like the Career Center, Arlington Tech, different options for students that are not necessarily just saying you are all going to college, but again, we do that in a way that says that's an option for you. And I think it's also important starting at the middle school level, how do we help students start to explore those different options? And then by the time they get into high school, have some pathways for them to explore even further, and then build in partnerships with our local businesses and community so we can do internships or mentorships or have speakers come in and build with students to get them excited about that. So that's something that's really important to me.
We're down, unfortunately, we have a lot more questions and we really only have time for one more.
Michael, if someone can capture those for me and email them to me, I'm happy to respond all those in email.
That would be great. We will do that.
And please invite me back as well, but please send those to me. I don't know what they all are, but I'm happy to answer everyone.
Thank you so much. The superintendent coming to the CivFed is something that's happened on an annual basis for almost 100 years. I'm probably exaggerating, but it's really a longstanding tradition. And it's one of the only opportunities that you have actually to speak to the general public. And the public to actually ask you questions. So it's a wonderfully rare opportunity. And we really are grateful that you're committed to engaging with us. And with that, I'll ask one last question.
Okay.
We have just that, I'm sorry, everybody, there was so many great stuff. Eric Cassell said, what about events, clubs, and other extracurricular activities? I will just add that now with vastly larger schools, you know, the sports teams are still the same size, and there's still there are big limitations on trying to meet everybody's needs after school in these various kinds of extracurricular activities.
Well, based on that, I would need to, you know, learn a little bit more about what the issues are with it. So I don't know that level of detail you just shared, but overall, I guess the question about events, clubs, and extracurricular activities, my vision is that that's very important. Again, it goes back to that holistic experience for children to experience while they're with APS, and making sure, you know, for many students, it's the club and the extracurricular activities that ties them and motivates them and excites them about coming to school. And how do we make sure we're building that for them? And so, again, I heard a little different part of that question, what you shared with me. So I would need to better understand that, but I guess I'm just responding generally overall to that. And I really am a huge supporter of those types of activities for students, because again, that connects so many. And for many students, they learn a skill about themselves that they've never even known. They get excited about something. It actually opens up doors for students. I know many, many students over the years as a former principal who it was that I was able to get them excited about, and then it really enhanced their learning. And I also say, when you think about what I was just saying at the very beginning, critical thinking, problem solving, analyzing, working with people, those are skills you learn through extracurricular activities and through clubs. And that's another way that we enhance those same skills that I think are so critical for us to do.
Thank you so much, Dr. Duran. And I think everybody, I hope everybody can applaud or
thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're very grateful.
And again, please send me the questions. I'm happy to come back. When I can come back, let me know. I'm happy to be here. I don't, if you do that, just know I might, you know, give me more time so we can have more time.
We absolutely will, sir. We typically do, as Michael mentioned, we do have the superintendent come in to speak once a year. And under the circumstances, we were very fortunate that you were able to come in and join us, not just because of the short time frame, but also because of circumstances going on. Absolutely. So yes, we will, usually it's sometime either later in the year or in the spring, and Michael Beer, he's the head of our schools committee, so he'll coordinate that.
Thank you, and it was a pleasure to see all the faces I could see, and I actually saw a young student come across the screen on someone, so that was wonderful to see that as well. But thank you all, and I look forward to the ongoing partnership with you. Thank you, Alan, for the invitation.
Absolutely, thank you, sir. Okay, so we'll go back to our agenda. And the next item on the agenda is an item that we would normally do during our annual banquet, which would have been in April, but we canceled it this year for some reason. I don't remember why. And that is our awards. So Lois, would you care to take the floor for the awards?
Yes, I'd be delighted. Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the awards part of the evening of tonight's meeting. This is the easy part. You get to sit back and relax and enjoy. As Alan said, we typically offer our awards at our annual banquet, but the coronavirus made that impossible. But on reflection, the awards committee proposed to the board of directors that we proceed with awards this year. In difficult times, more than ever, we really want to remember and reflect on the people and actions in our community that remind us of our shared values, our commitments, and our achievements this year, and give us something positive to hold on to. So this year, we will recognize several individuals for their exemplary civic service. And we also invited our outgoing president, Sandy Newton, to offer a president's award to an individual of her choice. And Alan, we hope to give you that same opportunity next year. And finally, we will hand over the microphone to our own local celebrity, Scott McCaffrey, to tell us about the winner of the Sun Gazette Cup. So you will hear first from me, from our President Emeritus, Duke Banks, and from our ever steady leader, leading citizen, Michael Beer, all of us on the awards committee. So without further ado, I'm going to start with our first award, which is in honor of Eric Gutschall. As you are no doubt aware, Eric Gutschall died in April. And he said that his time in office had been the fulfillment of a dream. So we're proud to offer this award to Renee, Eric's wife and partner. And
and his children. There we go. We've got the certificate up there. We thank Renee for sharing Eric with us and allowing us to honor him tonight with her. So, the Arlington County Civic Federation hereby presents an award for exemplary service to Eric Gutschall, a delegate of the Lyon Park Civic Association, for his contributions to the Arlington community, the county board, and the Civic Federation. Eric's engagement in the Arlington community began with his neighborhood association and ran the gamut from the Small Business Administration as a small business owner to the Planning and Transportation Commissions, to his church, school PTAs, sports, Doorways for Women and Families, and to the arts, including Encore Theater, where he could be seen waiting with other parents while his child auditioned. Specifically, while serving on the Planning Commission, he developed a very strong interest in and advocacy for what he called the missing middle housing, as came up earlier in our forum this evening. He was deeply concerned about housing affordability at every income level. And on the board, he also championed bike paths and alternative transportation solutions. During Eric's tenure as a county board member, he would still attend Civic Federation meetings and engage with speakers from a delegate perspective. He truly prided himself on continuing to attend meetings of grassroots organizations. And he would often recommend to anyone looking to be involved in civic life that they start with their neighborhood associations. Eric was never pushy unless he was pushing us to face community challenges and find ways to make Arlington a better place for us all. His own work was thorough and thoughtful. He always listened with humility to everyone who would speak with him. He thought innovatively and questioned with an open mind. And he particularly had a talent for building relationships and finding common ground. It seems there was nothing Eric couldn't do. Friends and colleagues call him visionary, passionate, and kind, a civil servant who was characterized by insight, intellect, and not least, humor. Eric was smart and he cared. And we honor him today for his determination and ability to act on these attributes. For all of this, we are grateful. And I'm sorry that there can be no applause in this forum, but we thank you for joining us tonight, Renee. So now I get to hand off to Duke for our next certificate. Duke, are you there?
Hi there. I had to find the unmute button, but can everybody hear me? Alan, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Yes, following on what Lois mentioned, we took the awards committee, looked at various aspects of what's happened in the last couple of years, and also recognizing who deserves awards. Our next award is presented for exemplary civic service to John Seymour, delegate from the Williamsburg Civic Association, for his contribution to the Arlington community and the Civic Federation. John has lived in Arlington for decades, where he has distinguished himself as a constant voice for environmental and ecological reform. As the former chair of the Environmental Affairs Committee, he played a key role in drafting a Civic Federation resolution to support Arlington's yard waste pickup program, and then arrange follow-up meetings with the Department of Environmental Services to ensure that this program was sensible and economically implemented. Last year, he co-chaired the Joint Park and Recreation Committee and Environmental Affairs Committees, dealing with the controversial level of service issue concerning athletic fields and its impact on the public service master plan. His calm demeanor in navigating. Competing arguments allowed for a successful resolution towards achieving a carbon-free footprint in future years, and prepared a briefing on the Arlington Energy Plan update public on a myriad of environmental issues, such as the February 14th, 2020 contribution on the Washington Post local opinion page, which provided a detailed explanation of Arlington's purchase of part of the output of the Dominion Energy 132-megawatt solar cell farm and how it would help move Arlington toward its 2025 goal for energy, for cleaner energy. The Civic Federation conveys this award not only because of his contribution to environmental causes, but also how he approached his civic involvement with civility, being low-key without trying to capture the spotlight, and always listening and respecting the opinion of others. Because of these traits, he has set the standard on how a delegate should be involved in CIVFED and why this award is merited. Congratulations, John, and let us all give at least a hand of applause for John Seymour. And with that, I now hand off to back to Michael Beer.
The Civic Federation is delighted to give a certificate of exemplary service to Theo Stamos for decades of outstanding public service to the people of Arlington County, Virginia. Theo began her civic service decades ago, serving on the executive committee of the Arlington Traditional School Parent Teacher Association and as family network chair at Swanson Middle School. She is a former member of the Yorktown High School Basketball Boosters and is a graduate of the Leadership Arlington. She began her professional service to our community as an editor and reporter for various news outlets, including the Washington Times. In 1987, Theo joined the Commonwealth Attorney's Office in Arlington. She was promoted to Deputy Commonwealth Attorney in 1998 and then to Chief Deputy in 2002. Theo Stamos was elected and served as the Commonwealth's Attorney for Arlington County and the City of Falls Church, Virginia, from 2011 through 2019. As Commonwealth's Attorney, Theo supervised a staff of Assistant Commonwealth Attorneys, Victim Witness Specialists, and support staff who handled a broad range of felonies and misdemeanors in both adult and juvenile court. One of her signature accomplishments was the creation of our county's first drug court program. Theo is on the board of directors of the Arlington County Bar Foundation and previously served on the board of directors of the Arlington County Bar Association and was elected to its judicial selection committee. Theo has also provided extensive civic service beyond Arlington to the people of Virginia. She chaired a variety of committees of the Virginia Association of Commonwealth Attorneys and served on several committees of the Virginia State Bar. Theo and her husband, Craig, live in the Westover neighborhood of Arlington and raise two sons. On behalf of the Arlington County Civic Federation and the people of Arlington, we want to thank you for your exemplary civic service. We are forever grateful. And for this, we are giving a certificate of Exemplary Civic Service 2020. With that, let's give a round of applause, virtual applause as best we can. And now it's off to
Duke.
So Duke, yes. Back up. Yes, I'm back to give another award. The Arlington County Civic Federation presents an award for exemplary civic service to Tina Wharton, a delegate from Sherrington Dogs 2, for her contributions to the Arlington community and the Civic Federation. Tina Wharton never says no or backs away from any challenge when asked to help or to support the community. Her impressive civic resume includes: for over 2 years, she served as on the 4 Mile Run Valley Initiative Working Group as an alternate representative for both the Arlington Commission for the Arts and the Douglas Park Civic Association. In this role, she also performed vital tasks supporting the Sherrington Dogs Park Group Committee in producing its final report to the working group. For the past 4 years, Tina's been a volunteer with Shirlington Dogs too in providing support and performance and performing maintenance duties, plus serves as vice chair of the organization. Tina also serves in the Arts Commission, plus is chair of the CivFed Cultural Affairs Commission, when she was instrumental in organizing a multifaceted presentation concerning arts in Arlington today. For the past year, Tina has represented CivFed on the Neighborhood Conservation Program Review Committee that is evaluating the Neighborhood Conservation Program. Tina is a firm believer in getting involved and making a difference in our community. She overcomes her uncertainty and dives headfirst into new tasks, positions, and responsibilities given to her. She does not shy away from difficult tasks or people, and she focuses on learning everything she can about anything put in front of her. When a vacancy occurred on the CivFed board, Tina jumped in immediately, not expecting to confront the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on how CivFed meets and conducts its business. Tina took it upon herself to analyze and review the various options for teleconferencing capabilities to present options to the Civic Federation. She jumped in learning what she could about the best options, comparing costs, benefits, and risk for each solution. This evening, in this virtual meeting, we're all benefiting because of Tina's efforts in finding a solution on how to conduct a virtual meeting in the midst of a pandemic. This is one example of how she takes on unknown tasks and chases down the details while learning all she can. It is this can-do attitude, along with her tact and diplomacy, in which why she merits this award. Congratulations, Tina. We love you dearly. Virtual applause. And with that, it's my turn to hand it over. And I hand this now to our former president, Sandy. Unmute yourself, Sandy.
Unmute, I got it. Okay, thank you. I am pleased to present a President's Award to Jackie Snelling. Last summer, when I became the president, I attended a lot of Civic Association meetings, but by July 8th, when the flood came, it had me turn to the public services chair, which is Jackie. And we needed a working group for the flood mitigation, and she organized that, got different concerns put together. This developed a wonderful working friendship and a personal friendship. I was amazed at her organizational skills, she has many contacts that she's developed in the county through FEMA, through Homeland Security, the Red Cross, the Police Chiefs Advisory Group, Work Group, and she in her employment through the Department of Education. For some of this past work, she was awarded Civic Federation Sun Gazette Cup. She has many other awards, too numerous to mention. I can just say that if you went to Arlington County and you talked to somebody, or even the federal government, and they ask if you know Jackie, they'd say, yes, they do. My focus as a delegate was on human trafficking, which is alive and well in Arlington. Jackie and I shared some personal issues with that, and she facilitated a workshop that I could go to that was on a national level. We began to think that this was an interesting topic for the Civic Federation and began forming panels and partnerships. This began in August, and by February, we had interviewed over 50 people. In this interview process, we realized that mental health was actually a larger topic and needed addressing. So we developed these panels. We helped to have a youth mental health panel and an adult mental health panel. This happened in February. We did have the youth mental health panel. If you've not seen it, you should, because it relates to the current things that we're going through now. We learned that police do go with social workers to make it safe. We saw the involvement of all these mental health issues that Arlington is addressing. But many departments are addressing them in separate ways, and Jackie was able to bring some of this together. The success of this panel that we had was due to Jackie's diligence and her patience and hard work. And I could not let this go by with this opportunity to laud Jackie for all that she's done. She's an amazing woman, and she's contributed so much to the Arlington community. Jackie's retiring as chair of the Public Services Committee, and a well-deserved retirement, and she's assured me that she would be happy to help anybody who's interested in doing, being in charge of the committee or working on the committee. I will miss seeing her as much as I have, and I want to thank Jackie for all of her hard work. I do have her President's Award right here. I don't know if you can see that. Jackie's Snelling. And the 2020 President's Award, Jackie. And also this engraved gavel. I will get this to you. I promise I'm going out of my house more and more. But thank you. Thank you so much, Jackie, for all your hard work and for your wonderful friendship. Thanks.
Yay. Thank you, Sandy. That was lovely. Thank you. And now we come to my very favorite part of each year's awards. Our final award this evening is the coveted Sun Gazette Cup. The editor of the Sun Gazette and local journalistic celebrity, Scott McCaffrey, is joining us to do the honors. I find Mr. McCaffrey always well-informed, often educational, and generally entertaining, as long as he's not writing or speaking about me, of course. But thank you for joining us again this year, and I'll hand this over to you, Scott.
Okay, thank you. You hear me? Everything okay?
Yep.
Good. Well, first of all, I decided to stay in the office tonight to do that. That proved technologically not to be the smartest thing. So if we want to get the camera on Sandy, maybe we can just go back to Sandy, because I've got a surprise for you, Sandy. But before we start saying nice things about you, let me just give you the history. Look happy. It's a good thing. The Sun Gazette's Cup did not begin life as the Sun Gazette Cup. It began life as the Washington Star Cup in the 1930s. And as I like to say, this organization killed off the Washington Star. So it became the Journal Cup in the 1980s, and then this organization killed off the Journal. And in 2003, the Sun Gazette very happily took over this award. And I have the cup with me. You're going to get it at some point. But I want to say Sandy Newton joins a great group of people, including Jackie Snelling, which, as you mentioned earlier. And I would just like to say a few nice things about Sandy. As we all know, her tenure got a little cut short because of health issues. We are glad you are on the mend. That's the most important thing. But nonetheless, you had a very important tenure during the brief year, half a year. We mentioned human trafficking. Certainly, you came to this job from the Women's Club of Arlington. You are, I read a lot of nice things about you, which will end up in print, most of them, I hope, as soon as my little fingers can type them. You've been a resident of Arlington for 30 years, longtime volunteer with George Washington's Mount Vernon, which I understand is reopening, if it hasn't already.
Sunday.
Monday, fantastic.
Sunday,
I take it back, thank you. Not the first time I've been corrected today, so it's not a problem. It happens to me all the time. I just wanna say the one thing I read from all the things that I read. It said, Sandy is a creative, a true inspiration to many people, and a wonderful neighbor. And I think that more than any award is probably the nicest thing, but nonetheless, you are going to get the award. We're gonna set up some time to come get it and get a photo. And I look forward to seeing you in person. It's wonderful. I also wanna thank tonight the Civic Federation. I literally have half a notebook, much notes for all kinds of stories that will end up. So I always appreciate coming. But anyway, a round of applause for Sandy Newton. Thank you.
Whoop,
whoop.
Yay! This was a surprise.
It was a surprise. Good. That was always fun. So thank you. And Lois, thank you for the kind words. And I will turn it back to you.
And actually, I'm out. I hand it back to Alan, and we'll get on with the meeting. But
Congratulations, Sandy, and all of our award winners. And thank you all for your indulgence this evening.
Thanks. Thank you, Lois. Thank you, everybody on the awards committee, for all your hard work. And congratulations to all the awardees. It's a wonderful thing to see. And Sandy, it's really great, so great to see you again.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have a few other items to cover this evening. And I know we're running a little bit long, but I guess we're still on our original schedule. First thing I'd like to cover is officer elections. So we have a slate of candidates. Duke, do you have that slate up? You're muted, Duke.
No, I can't see you that way either.
No, I don't have it. I sent it to you. I can get it up in the meantime, but I think for opening remarks, I want to pass this over back to Miriam.
Okay, I'm here. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep, thank you.
All right, well, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Miriam Gennari. I'm a delegate. I'm the vice president of the Aurora Highlands Civic Association and a member of Friends of Aurora Highlands Park and also Arlington Independent Media. I'm fortunate to be a member of the nominating committee. Thank you, Lois, for recommending me. I really enjoyed it. My colleagues have asked that I present the results of the nominating committee to the membership. Our members of the nominating committee included Mike Menemin, Dennis Garrity, and Duke Banks. We have one vacancy to fill because of the resignation of our president, Sandy Newton, in March. Since then, Alan Gadahar. Alan, is that good?
Close. Gadahar.
Gadahar, thank you. And our vice president. Our vice president has taken on the role of acting president. Dennis Garrity has chosen to leave the board of directors, creating a second vacancy. The remaining officers and directors have indicated that they are willing to continue in their role, and we thank them for that. The committee met and discussed the nominees, as well as conducted personal interviews. We are pleased to put forward two candidates who have indicated their willingness to serve on the board of directors. Those candidates are Michael Cantwell, president of the Yorktown Civic Association and delegate, and John Weistat, delegate from the Arlington Historical Society and the Tara Leeway Civic Association. The nominating committee hence proposes the following slate for the fiscal year beginning July 1st, 2020. Now I see the slate, wonderful. President Alan Gadahar, moving up from vice president and acting president. Now, vice president Tina Warden, moving up from at-large delegate. Secretary Alan Norton, continuing. Treasurer Boot Boswick, continuing. At-large delegates, Eric Castle, Michael Menemin, and Stacy Myers. At-large delegates, new, Michael Cantwell and John Weistat. Our bylaws indicate that while nominating committee is charged with presenting a slate of candidates, if others wish to be an officer on the board of directors, they can submit their names. Are there any other candidates on the call right now who would like to submit their name? Drum roll. Okay, then I believe that this is the slate. I'll send it back to, I guess, Duke, you want to take it from here, or is it Michael that will?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Duke.
Yes. If there are no other candidates, a ballot will be sent to the delegates that will give them the option of either approving or disapproving the nominating committee slate of candidates. Dennis might want to fill in and fill us in as how that is going to work.
Dennis, you there? Can you unmute yourself, Dennis? Dennis, can you hear us?
Um,
Okay.
Well, can you hear me now? Okay, okay. Good. Sorry. I had to unmute myself. You have until 10:30 this evening to complete your ballot for the officers and directors. All right. We'll let you know the results in a few days. Anybody got any questions? I think the form is self-evident, but if it's not, Ellen Gadzahar is going to explain it to you.
It is pretty self-evident. It has a button on it to click to vote for the candidates. It lists the ballot, as you can see on the screen right now. And then Dennis, has it already gone out via email?
It just sent it out. It's on its way out now.
Alan, so, the button's not working on mine for some reason.
Dennis, did you catch that?
I heard what he said.
Let me see if it's in mine. Well, just so everybody knows,
I received mine.
Does the button work though? Does the voting button work? That's the question. Look here.
Alan, it's Suzanne Sundberg. The button, I've gotten the message, but the button doesn't work on mine either.
Yep.
Thank you.
Same with me.
Let me see if I can do a little. Why don't you let me do a little? I can send this out later, but let me do a little patchwork here. I'm not sure what the issue is, but.
All right. So I'm going to propose something really quickly then. Given that there are no nominations from the floor and we know who the delegates are, I would like to move that we approve this slate by acclamation. Does anybody else have any comments on that motion? Michael, Duke, John, anybody?
I support this, and if anybody has an objection to this, they should raise their voice or put it in the chat.
Okay.
Also, you know, we can use the participant button, and there's a yes or no button that we can click. I've just clicked yes on mine.
Yes.
And all of those who are present can vote that way.
That's what I'm suggesting. Thank you very much.
Okay, sorry. Beat you to it.
So, yes, in the participants window, there's a yes or no button.
Mm-hmm. Participants.
And you all should be able to see it, and then you can vote there. And if anybody votes no, and then let that go for a minute or two. And then we have a listing of everybody who's in the meeting and whether or not they are a delegate. So we'll have to compile that a little bit later. Unless Tina, are you there?
We're here. We're here.
Okay. So do you guys have a list of the delegates that are in this meeting right now? Can you compare them?
Alan, I think it'd be better to simply consent rather than trying to have them vote as individuals, okay? It'll be pretty complicated.
Well, everybody's voting yes so far, so.
Are they?
How many people do we have right now? We have 54 currently in. And what is the threshold?
Right now we have 30 yeses.
What's the threshold? Is it 2/3 or is it a majority?
It's present voting, a majority of those present and voting.
All right, well, we've got that.
So.
Well, Alan, you haven't voted. Dennis hasn't voted.
Well,
Alan, I can't vote.
I got too much stuff to do. Jeez, I got too much stuff to do in front of me here.
Hey, guys. I can't vote because I'm on the phone. I'm just going to forward my ballot or my message back to Alan and Dennis.
Okay,
and record it as a yes vote.
This is Suzanne. Was that Suzanne speaking?
Yes, that was Suzanne.
Okay. So, and I have a recording of this meeting, and we'll review it afterwards.
Does your recording show these yes votes?
I guess
a screenshot or something.
That, you know, that's a good question. I'm assuming that it does.
I can't see them all on my screen.
It does record the chat. So,
okay.
All right, let's take a couple screenshots really quickly then. Let's see.
And you haven't voted, Alan.
Can I vote too?
Yeah.
You're a delegate.
I am a
and
delegate.
Dennis?
I'll get there I'm so busy with other stuff. I'll be like Suzanne. You'll have to, everybody hears me. I'm busy doing something that's super, right? Okay, so give me a break.
Break? tell you what, I'll let you resign from the board. How about that?
I'm gone, sir. I'm gone.
Wow, that was fast.
I've been removed.
All right. So I'm going to take a couple screenshots really quickly. Or actually, can anybody else?
Doing it right now.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and do that, Tina, if you would, and then I'll go ahead and run the rest of the meeting. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have a couple more agenda items. Basically, under new business, we have, I've appointed John Ford as head of the Public Services Committee. And he is asking for anybody who's interested in serving on the floodwater working group to please contact him. And if you don't have his contact info, reach out to me and I will connect you. Okay, so that is new business item number one. New business item number two, I'm gonna share my screen again. Arlington County is offering free COVID testing again, coming up. If those of you haven't heard, bear with me for a second, let me pull up the announcement. It is going to be at Barcroft again on Friday, June 19th, which is this Friday, starting at 8 a.m. until tests run out. Again, it's at Barcroft Sports and Fitness Center, drive-through and walk-up testing, no doctor referral needed, no appointment, no identification, free, 2 years and older, and language translation will be available. Okay. One additional announcement, and then Stacey has something she'd like to bring up. The schools committee is going to be very busy. Obviously, this summer there's a lot going on, as you heard Dr. Duran discuss, as well as everything we all know. So Michael Beer is also looking for people to join the schools committee or volunteer to help out. Stacey, you had some new business.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Hi. So as you can tell, we have been a little bit challenged with the voting aspect of these online meetings. And when we started the online meetings, we went to this constant contact, the email voting. It was a great solution. Figured out, you know, that we could do it. It works. But there has been, and the board has approved the online meetings that we would work this way, and that we would do these this email voting. I've had some folks come to me with concerns about the fact that as a sort of a byproduct of the online voting, it is now that all of the votes now are anonymous because Constant Contact, which is the software that we use, just gives us a number for the votes, and doesn't really say we don't know who voted for what. And it's not that big of an issue, except that in the in-person meetings, we naturally, because we were doing hands up counting of votes, people kind of knew what people were doing. And so that was a change that was inadvertent because of the technology. I think, Alan, you put your toe into trying to do something a little bit similar tonight with this vote, figuring that we have not a whole lot of maybe contention, and trying to figure out how to use a different format to go back to something that is more like an in-person vote. I think what we did here with the yes button sort of goes down that road, but we're not, I don't think we're quite there yet, because we still have to, there's a technological issue of trying to cross-reference folks. It's a little bit challenging. Anyway, at the board, we were a little bit split as to what to do with this, and we decided that we wanted to make sure that we were working with everyone and doing what the membership wanted to do, and that we were all on the same page. So we were proposing a motion for tonight. It'll go into the next newsletter, and then we'll be able to vote on this by in the fall, and hopefully by then we will have figured out a good way to run the voting that is more like an in-person vote.
So with that, it's a lot of detail, but it's important because we want to make sure that, like I said, that people are getting the online experiences is as close to our in-person voting as it can be, given the challenges we have with the technology. So there's a motion sent to Alan earlier. He has it up. So the Civic Association has, I'm just going to read it as is required. We'll put it in the newsletter. If you have questions, I guess you can reach out to me. My email is right up there, stacy.meyer@ymail.com. Happy to talk about it. Tina also knows more about the technology as well. So here's the proposed motion, just reading it out as required. Civic Federation Board has approved to bring the following issue, the membership, for discussion and the vote. Whereas the Arlington Civic Federation votes are limited delegates of its member organizations, and those organizations have an interest in how their delegates vote. Whereas the Arlington Civic Federation has had in the past open voting by delegates at its in-person meeting by counting raised hands with voting cards. Whereas since April 2020, the Civic Federation has moved to online meetings due to COVID. And I will add, I think we're planning to keep going with the online meetings in some way, shape, or form in the future. Whereas the Arlington Civic Federation has used a software program, Constant Contact, for voting by email after each meeting. And whereas due to the nature of the software, Constant Contact only reports the numbers of votes and does not report who voted. It effectively creates anonymous counts of the delegate votes. And whereas Arlington Civic Federation can now use other technology or methods to retain open voting of the in-person meetings, be it resolved that Arlington Civic Federation use technologies or methods beginning at the September 2020 meeting, which allow for open voting, and each delegate's vote is known and counted. With that, if there's any questions or discussion, happy to open it up.
Okay, first of all, Stacy, the software will allow us to record. I don't know why it didn't work tonight, but it will allow us to record open votes.
Excellent.
And so if people want a list of people's names, we can take it down. I'm not sure why it didn't work tonight for the vote on the slate of candidates, but it can record individual names and votes. So if people want to do it that way.
And we've used that technology before. And so the resolution is that we're going to explore additional options. The board will be discussing that, the newly elected board this summer, which we will continue to meet. Thank you, Stacy. And then Pete Oliver had a question or a comment.
Actually, comment. Zoom lets you do a poll. If you set the question up in advance, you can put it out and it can record either anonymously or with names and generate a report. So we don't need to go out of the system. The only thing we need to do is provide for those who dial in by phone.
Yeah, we are learning.
Yeah, we did look at the polling feature. There was an issue with it. I can't remember what it was, but thank you, Pete. That's a good point. And there's additional options too. Zoom has a lot of features that we haven't fully explored. We just kind of threw this all together at the last minute, and we're still learning as we go. Okay, so there are a couple of other announcements there in the chat. I want to, get this moving pretty quickly, but one additional point, the county board is hosting a conversation on race. Where is that? I'm sorry. Stop sharing. And then... it's a virtual listening session on racial justice, systemic racism, policing on the county board. It'll be Thursday evening. And if you go to the county board website, you can register to speak up until 6 p.m. tomorrow. So you can do that now if anybody's interested in doing that. There's also, this is from Miriam Gennari, Sustainable Scoop Youth Mobilization for folks 19 and younger to register for Eco Action County Board Environmental Forum. And again, that's in the chat as well. All right, there's one additional item, and we have the minutes from the last meeting, which were sent out via the newsletter. We need to approve those.
Let's try to vote again, Alan.
I'll set it out right now, see
if people will try to get them to vote on. 1 second here.
Okay, so a vote. We'll go ahead and have that sent out, and we'll tabulate those results offline. If it doesn't work offline, we can submit it for vote at another meeting. Okay?
All right.
All right. Is there any other new business? If anybody has any, please raise your hand or put it in the chat.
Alan? I just have just mentioned that Crystal City Underground Challenge is going on, and that's a challenge. Or it's a contest, essentially, to write about the Crystal City Underground. So you can look at livability2202.org to find out more details. So if you have interactions with the Crystal City Underground, please be aware that there's a great challenge. And if you have old pictures or videos or something like that, and there are prizes.
Great. Thank you so much. Tina, did you capture all the screenshots for the yes votes?
I did.
Okay. Alrighty. Then if nobody has anything else, we can adjourn the meeting. Does anybody care to call for that?
We'll move.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of adjourning the meeting?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining. Thank you for the county board candidates. Thank you for Dr. Duran. Thank you for everybody who's helped coordinate the awards, the nominations, and all the electronics. This has been a little bit of a challenge the last couple of months, but I think it's by and large worked out reasonably well.
Thank you, Alan. Well done.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, good job.
Well done, Alan.
Excellent job.
Well, you know what they say, in the words of someone famous, thank you all, and I hope we pass the audition.
Thank you much. Have a great evening.
All right.
Good evening.
Thank you, Alan, for being willing to do this for another year. Thank you for the coming year. Really appreciate you stepping in. Thank you so much.
And thanks to Dennis for all his hard work.
Yeah, Dennis, we're going to miss you. Yeah, thank Dennis. You so much.
No, you won't.
Yes, we will.
No, you won't. Get out of here. Get out of here.
Dennis, we will.
Absolutely. No, you will not. You're a bunch of drunks.
That's true. We might be drunk, but we're still going to miss you.
That's a different meeting. Dennis, that's a different meeting.
Yeah. Excuse me, sir?
That's a different meeting, the group of drunks.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody. It was a pleasure. And I'll also be around to help. It was a pleasure serving the Federation.
Dennis, I think you've held it together for a lot of years.
Oh, Lois, please.
It's true.
Wonderful. It was a fantastic end of the year here for this Civic Federation. It was a fan. Lois, you did great. I thought that everything went really, really well. And yeah, really pleased with this final meeting. Was really superb. And the number of people that stayed on for the awards and the very end, a lot of people stayed on, which is just fantastic.
Yeah.
Dennis, I got the vote for the minute, so it worked, and I just sent it in.
Okay, oh, good. So I don't know what happened to the other one. I may have forgotten to put a link in there, but like I said, we can have a recorded vote if you want it. I mean,